This episode of Game Master's Journey is brought to you by the patrons and other supporters of Starwalker Studios. Find out more about becoming a patron, as well as all the other great ways you can support the show at starwalkerstudios.com/support. Starwalker Studios presents Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. Hello, fellow gamer. Welcome to episode 202 of Game Master's Journey. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker. On this show, we discuss the craft and art of game mastering. I've been running RPGs for over 26 years now, and I produce this show in the hopes that you can benefit from my experience, my triumphs, and my mistakes. Today, I return to my exploration of the Dungeon Master's Guide with a discussion on creating encounters. But before we crack open the DMG, I want to give a shout out and a huge thank you to my new patron, Scott. Thank you so much, Scott, and welcome to the patrons of Starwalker Studios. So this is quite a lengthy discussion today, so we're going to get right into it. And this is the first of what will likely be a 2 or 3 episode series on building encounters. So today we're going to talk about the thoughts and advice given on building encounters in the Dungeon Master's Guide. And then in a future episode, we'll talk about random encounters and we'll talk about the encounter building system and guidance given in Xanathar's Guide. So go grab your DMG if you've got one and let's talk about encounters. So today I'm returning to one of my favorite current series on the show, which is our exploration and discussion of the Dungeon Master's Guide. We are in part 2 of the book, Master of Adventures, and we are in chapter 3, Creating Adventures. So today we're picking up where we left off, and we're going to talk about creating encounters. And this is starting on page 81 of the Dungeon Master's Guide. So let's just jump into it. Encounters are the individual scenes in the larger story of your adventure. First and foremost, an encounter should be fun for the players. Second, it shouldn't be a burden for you to run. Beyond that, a well-crafted encounter usually has a straightforward objective as well as some connection to the overarching story of your campaign, building on the encounters that precede it while foreshadowing encounters yet to come. An encounter has one of three possible outcomes: the characters succeed, the characters partly succeed, or the characters fail. The encounter needs to account for all three possibilities, and the outcome needs to have consequences so that the players feel like their successes and failures matter. So in our last episode on this topic, episode 200, Creating Adventures, I talked quite a bit about how I personally feel that it's extremely important for there to be consequences for the actions and choices that the players take and make. And this is just reiterating that point. So if you want to hear more about that, you can check out episode 200. So I personally, I think this comes a lot from my time playing and running White Wolf games, namely Changeling the Dreaming and Vampire the Masquerade. When I'm creating adventures and when I'm thinking about adventures, I always approach it from the perspective of scenes, and I'm talking about scenes as scenes in drama. So oftentimes a scene is tied to a location. So you think about like a live play on stage, and different scenes are when they have to change the stage dressing, change the props and the background and everything, and effectively change location in the story. And in the traditional play, there's usually, you know, a short little break while they move things around, and then we begin the new scene. But I think thinking about it from the perspective of scenes is very helpful in role-playing games as well for GMs, just as far as organizing our thoughts and organizing our game sessions. Now, I usually run about 3-hour sessions, and I've found in a 3-hour session, I can usually get through 1 to 3 scenes. So most sessions, I have 3 scenes prepared, and then I usually have some ideas for a 4th scene if I need it, but I almost never do. In fact, it's far more common that we get through fewer than 3 scenes than that we need to do more than 3. So again, you know, when you're thinking about scenes, the easiest way to approach it is a scene is everything that happens in a given location. So for example, I might start an adventure and I know that the player characters are staying at an inn. So the first scene is going to be them waking up from their night of sleep, from their long rest, being at the inn, having breakfast, deciding what they're going to do that day. So that's scene one. And usually I try to have something, some kind of action that happens in any scene. I don't ever want to have a scene like I just described where it's basically the characters have breakfast and talk about what they're going to do and that's it. And the problem with that setup is I'm relying 100% on the players to move the scene along. And I've found it's very helpful as a GM for every scene to have at least something, at least one thing that you can use to move the scene along, to get things going. If the players are kind of just not sure what to do, or maybe they're just planning endlessly and going in circles, or you're just ready to transition to the next thing, it can be very helpful to have something that you can do as a GM during that scene to move things along. So that could be an event that happens. The inn catches on fire, or there's an attack on the town, or something like that. It could be an NPC that approaches the player characters and talks to them about something. It could be the innkeeper comes and wants to settle, you know, their debt for their rooms that they haven't paid. Or it could be their patron comes with a new quest, or anything like that. So I usually try to think of either some kind of event that's going to happen that the players can react to, or some kind of NPC that's going to come interact with the players that, again, the players can react to. And really what this does is it gives me, as the GM, agency within the scene. And that's really important. You know, we talk a lot about player agency, and you hear a lot of people talk about player agency, and player agency is definitely very important. But what you don't hear so much about is GM agency. So just like in any adventure, you want there to be player agency. You want the players to feel like they can make meaningful choices and that they are in control of where the story is going. You want to have that player agency. You also, in any given scene, like what I'm talking about, you want to also have GM agency, which is to say a way that you as a GM can interact with the player characters, whether that's through NPCs you're going to role play, or maybe monsters they're going to fight, or something that's going to happen in the environment that they need to react to. And really the biggest reason for this, in my opinion, is so that you can keep things moving. And so that you don't want the players to feel like they can just sit around and plot and plan endlessly, and the whole world just kind of sits and holds its breath and waits for them to do something, right? You want there to be some urgency. You want there to be some tension. And one way to establish that is to not allow the players to constantly sit around and strategize and plan forever. You know, if they're in the tavern and they're discussing their next move, and you feel like this discussion is going on a little bit longer than you'd like, then something can happen that they're now going to have to deal with, and we're going to move into action now instead of pontificating and planning. So this is something that I don't know that I've ever read this anywhere or heard anyone else talk about this, but this is something through my 26 plus years of running games that I have learned very much the hard way, is to, in any scene I run, to have some form of GM agency I can tap and use if I need to. Now, I don't always use it. I don't always need to use it. Sometimes, you know, in our example, the players talk for 5 minutes about what they're going to do and they go do the thing. And there's no need for me to bring in something to get the story moving again. But I always have something in my back pocket in case I need it. All right. So in our little introduction here to creating encounters, we just, you know, threw out a bunch of things, you know, that the encounter should be fun for the players, that it should be fun for you as a GM. It shouldn't be a total pain in the ass to run. And that there should be some kind of fairly straightforward objective just to give the players direction so that they can all be on the same page as far as what are we trying to do here. So let's talk more about those objectives. So when players don't know what they're supposed to do in a given encounter, anticipation and excitement can quickly turn to boredom and frustration. A transparent objective alleviates the risk of players losing interest. So the last thing you want is for the players to suddenly look at themselves and be like, what are we even doing here? Why are we even doing this? What's going on? Right? You always want there to be clear objectives and motives to what the player characters are doing and why. For example, if the overall story of your adventure involves a quest to deliver a priceless relic to a remote monastery, each encounter along the way is an opportunity to introduce a smaller objective that moves that quest forward. Encounters during the trip might see the adventurers accosted by enemies determined to steal the relic, or by monsters that are constantly threatening the monastery. Some players create their own objectives, which is to be expected, and you should definitely encourage that. It is, after all, as much the player's campaign as it is yours. For example, a character might try to bribe enemies rather than fight them, or chase after a fleeing enemy to see where it goes. Players who ignore objectives will have to deal with the consequences, which is another important facet of encounter design. So that's something to think about when you're designing your encounter, is what are the objectives in this encounter and what are the consequences if the player characters don't succeed in that objective or if they choose to ignore it. All right, so the DMG then proceeds to give you quite a few sample objectives, or really objective types. And we'll go through these really quickly, but you can go to your DMG for more details here. And this can really help you with your encounters if you can pin down at least one objective for every encounter you come up with. And again, you know, or not again, I guess this is the first time I said this episode. When I'm saying encounter, that doesn't necessarily mean combat encounter. A lot of people, when they hear the word encounter, they think it has to be a combat encounter, and that's not true. Again, this is why I tend to prefer to think in terms of scenes and to actually use the term scene instead of encounter. They're kind of synonymous, but slightly different, because a scene doesn't so much carry that connotation of this is a combat related thing, where for a lot of people encounter does. But when we're talking about encounters here, you can have social encounters and you can have exploration encounters. So just because we're talking about an encounter doesn't mean it has to be a combat. So these strategies and thoughts will also work for exploration encounters or social encounters or any other encounters that you want to use. So here are some example objectives. Make peace. The characters must convince two opposing groups or their leaders to end the conflict. Protect an NPC or object. They must act as bodyguards or protect some object in their custody. Retrieve an object. They must gain possession of a single or a specific object in the area of the encounter, preferably before combat finishes. And again, it doesn't have to be combat. Unfortunately, a lot of times in the books, I don't know if this is intentional or not. I suspect it's not. But a lot of times there seems to be a focus on combat encounters, but we just have to constantly remind ourselves that none of these have to be combat encounters. Run a gauntlet. The adventurers must pass through a dangerous area. sneak in. The adventurers need to move through the encounter area without making their enemies aware of their presence. Stop a ritual. The plots of evil cult leaders, malevolent warlocks, and powerful fiends often involve rituals that must be stopped. Take out a single target. The villain is surrounded by minions powerful enough to kill the PCs. The characters can flee and hope to confront the villain another day, or they can try to fight their way through the minions to take out their target. So again, those are just general examples of the types of objectives player characters could have for a specific encounter. And you can refer to the DMG for more information on each of those. And I'm sure that we could come up with other examples of types of objectives they might have. But I think that's enough to definitely get you started and get you going. All right. So as I said, an encounter does not have to be a combat encounter. However, combat encounters are their kind of own special animal because we have a lot of rules in the game that we tend to use more in combat encounters than other encounters. For instance, initiative. You almost always use initiative in a combat encounter. Almost always, if not always. However, you can, of course, and we often do use initiative in other types of encounters, whether that's exploration or social or whatever. But the combat encounter is where we see that system used the most, right? And a lot of the spells and abilities in the game are very combat focused, and which is not to say that you can't use them out of combat, but a lot of spells and abilities take a little more creativity to use outside of combat than in combat because they're really designed for combat. So, you know, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of rules and systems in the game that we tend to rely on more in combat than we do in other encounters. But again, I want to stress that none of these rules are specific to combat. Just because a spell like Magic Missile does damage doesn't mean you can't find a way to use that in a social encounter or an exploration encounter. Or, like I said, initiative. I often will use initiative in non-combat encounters for whatever reason. Maybe it's a social encounter and I feel like, because I usually have a pretty large group of players, maybe I feel like all the players aren't getting a fair shot to say or do something. So I might use initiative in a social encounter just to have some structure so I don't have one or two players that are carrying the conversation and no one else is getting a word in. So if we use initiative, everybody gets a turn. Also, there are certain mechanics that you may want to use or that the players may want to use that are easier to do if you're using initiative. So a perfect example of this is the readying an action mechanic. And Jeremy Crawford talked about this on one of the Sage Advice segments of the Dragon Talk podcast, where he was talking about readying as an action and how that works. And a very classic example of a way players will use the ready action in a, for instance, a social encounter is when they're having a tense negotiation and there's this feeling like things could go south at any minute. So a smart thing for player characters to do in that situation is to ready an action, saying something like, okay, you know, we're going to keep talking, but the minute one of these guys draws a weapon or the minute someone makes a hostile move, I'm going to have this readied action of attacking with my sword or whatever the readied action is. So readying an action is absolutely something that can be done outside of combat. However, when you do it outside of combat, it's often useful to have an initiative in place just because of the way readying works and the fact that, you know, like in my example, a lot of these times the readied action will then move us into combat. So it'll be a lot more fluid if, for instance, one of the negotiators does make a hostile move and now that player is going to take their readied attack. It'll just be a much more fluid transition if you already have an initiative order established. And a great way to do initiative that I've talked about before on the show and how I try to do it is I roll initiative ahead of time. So what I try to do is at the very beginning of the session, before we even get started, I have all the players roll initiative for their characters. I record those numbers. And then the first time that I need initiative in the game, whether that's a combat scenario or some other kind of scenario, I already have the player characters' initiatives. I don't have to stop the action and the pacing to ask for an initiative roll. I already have it. And I can make my initiative rolls for any NPCs involved ahead of time as well. And then what I'll do is after I use that initiative at the end of that encounter or the end of that scene, I will then have the player characters roll initiative again, which I will then use in the next scene. And I've just found that's a much more fluid way to do it. And it alleviates a lot of that break in momentum that you have as soon as you go into initiative order. Because, oh, now we got to stop and everybody's got to roll initiative and we got to record the results and blah, 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 blah. So I've just found that it works a lot better to do that at the beginning of the session and then do it at the end of encounters instead of at the beginning. So we now go into a discussion of creating combat encounters. And we have a whole system here given in the Dungeon Master's Guide to help you build encounters. Now, the whole goal of this system is to give you a framework within which you can work to build encounters and to help you predict as much as is possible in these kinds of games, how this encounter is going to play out as far as how challenging is it going to be for your particular group of player characters. Now, there's a lot of criticism out there about this combat encounter design system, and I think a lot of the criticism comes from people who forget or don't realize that you can't design a system that's going to work for every group. There's way too much variety in the abilities player characters can have and the composition of a group of player characters. There's way too much variety there for you to be able to come up with some kind of system that's going to work for everybody. The way that you use a system like this is like everything as a GM, right? I feel like I say this all the time. You can't just use this out of the box. You can't just blindly follow the system and think that everything's going to be okay. You have to use your judgment as a GM and you have to adapt, right? So if you're using the system and you're consistently creating encounters that are too easy, then you know, okay, my player characters are a little bit more powerful than what the system is assuming, so I need to adjust accordingly. Or vice versa. If the encounters are harder than you think they were going to be, then maybe your player characters are a little less powerful than what the system is assuming. Maybe for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe you used a different way of generating ability scores, or maybe your player characters just aren't super tactical. Maybe they're making their combat decisions based more on what my character would do and what sounds interesting and fun, and less based on what is the optimal thing for me to do this round, right? So that can make a big difference in the effectiveness of a group. Or it could just be your party's composition. It could be the actual character classes and subclasses that the players are playing. So you can, again, adjust accordingly. Now, the other thing I'll note is we have a different system for creating encounters in Xanathar's Guide, which was previewed in the Unearthed Arcana. So if you find this system in the DMG a little overwhelming or you don't like it for some reason, I suggest that you check out the system in Xanathar's Guide as well. And we'll talk about that too later. Probably not in this episode, but in a later episode, I'll go through that and kind of tell you how that works compared to how this works. Now, personally, I think the best thing is to use both, which is what I do. And I guess I'll get into the nuts and bolts of why I use both a little bit later after we talk about this. Now, I've actually already discussed building encounters in 5th edition D&D extensively on the show in numerous past episodes. So depending when you're listening to this, some of these episodes may be archived. So I keep only the most recent episodes of the show in the podcast feed, but patrons get access to all the episodes. So again, depending when you're listening to this, how far in the future you're listening to this, some or all of these episodes I mentioned might be in the archive. But again, if you become a patron of the show, then you can get access to everything. So let's see. I did a two-part series on building D&D encounters back in episodes 64 and 65. In episode 82, I had a discussion on whether or not to use experience points, also random encounters, and a discussion of should the players always be successful? Should they always win encounters? And Cliff Note answer, the answer to that is no. In episode 84, I had a further discussion of whether or not to use XP and random encounters based on feedback that I'd received on episode 82. On episode 93, I talked about the XP system in D&D and the advancement system in D&D and some of the problems that I see with those systems. And then in episode 98, I discussed designing adventures and campaigns for D&D. Also, more recently, there are a few episodes where I talked specifically about the encounter building rules given in the Unearthed Arcana, which are now the rules in Xanathar's Guide. So I talked about that in episode 136. And then in episode 138, I discussed feedback on that discussion. And then in episode 139, I discussed still more feedback and had some more thoughts about the alternate encounter building guidelines that were given in either the Unearthed Arcana or Xanathar's Guide, which, by the way, if you don't have Xanathar's Guide, you can still get that Unearthed Arcana with the alternate encounter building guidelines, and it's the same. They didn't change anything for Xanathar's Guide, so you can get that for free, and I'll have a link to that PDF in the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com/gamemastersjourney/202.
This is Matthew Colville, and you're listening to Game Master's Journey.
I want to take a minute to give a quick shout out to the patrons of Starwalker Studios. The support of the patrons makes this show possible. If you enjoy Game Master's Journey and you'd like to give a little back, becoming a patron is a great way to do so. I'd also like to give a huge shout out and thank you to my Tier 5 patron, Steve. Let's hear it for Steve.
Yeah.
The man. Thank you so much, Steve, and thank you to all the patrons. You can find out more about becoming a patron by clicking on the Patreon button at the top of the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. All right, so let's talk about creating combat encounters. When creating a combat encounter, let your imagination run wild and build something your players will enjoy. Once you have the details figured out, use this section to adjust the difficulty of the encounter. And I think this is a really good point and something that I think I missed in the early days of running this edition, which is, you know, the best first step when you're creating a combat encounter is don't worry about challenge ratings, don't worry about this system in the Dungeon Master's Guide. Just think about, what do I want this encounter to be like? And come up with that. Come up with what kind of monsters you want to use, or what kind of terrain or environmental effects, or what's the objective of the encounter? What's the encounter going to look like? Like, imagine you saw this encounter in a movie. What would it look like? Come up with that. And then refer to this stuff and figure out, you know, how many monsters you want to use. Do you want to adjust the monsters in some way? How challenging do you want it to be? And things like that. I think it will serve you a lot better to start with a good idea and then worry about the mechanics, as opposed to starting with the mechanics, because you'll just get bogged down and you'll tend to create encounters that aren't terribly interesting if you start with mechanics. At least that's been my experience. All right, so let's talk about encounter difficulty. So in this, we have defined four different difficulties of encounters. And again, this is a generalization. right? So you're going to have to tailor this to your specific group. So this is going to be different for every GM, for every group, and it's going to be different for every group that a given GM runs. And it's just part of being a game master is dialing this in as the campaign goes on. And of course, every time you hand out a magic item, every time a character levels up, it all changes. But it's part of the fun. So first we have an easy encounter. So an easy encounter doesn't tax the character's resources or put them in serious peril. They might lose a few hit points, but victory is pretty much guaranteed. So an easy encounter is a chance for the player characters to feel powerful. It's not going to be super challenging. And it's really that. It's a chance for them to feel powerful and like, oh, look what badasses we are. If you're the kind of DM that is concerned about player character resources and constantly whittling down their resources, then easy encounters can be somewhat useful for that. But again, you know, oftentimes an easy encounter can be defeated without using any resources at all. You can just use cantrips and, you know, you don't need to use charges on magic items or anything like that for an easy encounter usually. But a lot of times player characters love using their most powerful abilities. So don't be surprised if, you know, they're throwing their highest level spells at the easy encounters that you throw at them. And, you know, this can sometimes be fun in something like a dungeon where the player characters are going to face a lot of combat encounters back to back. It can be a lot of fun when they waste all their cool abilities on the easy encounters in the beginning. And then now the harder encounters later on are much more challenging because they blew their wad on the easy stuff. Now, of course, player characters will just be like, well, let's just take a long rest. And it's up to you as a GM to manage that so that your adventure isn't a pushover. And also, again, consequences, right? So player choices should have consequences. So if the players choose to use all their best abilities on the easy encounter that they first have in the game session, and now they have a difficult encounter and they don't have those abilities anymore, that's a consequence of that choice. And you should let them suffer that consequence. It's the only way they're going to learn. If you just let them take long rests whenever they want, then they're going to Nova Alpha Strike every encounter, no matter how challenging it is. So it's probably not something you want. All right, so next we have a medium encounter, which is usually has one or two scary moments for the players, but the characters should emerge victorious with no casualties. One or more of them might need to use healing resources. So again, you know, we're dialing up a little bit. It's like, well, now you might have to use some resources. There might be a couple tense moments, but probably no one's going to die or even get knocked to zero hit points. Hard encounter. Now, this could go badly for the adventurers. Weaker characters might get taken out of the fight, and there's a slim chance that one or more characters might die. And then we have the deadly encounter. A deadly encounter could be lethal for one or more player characters. Survival often requires good tactics and quick thinking, and the party risks defeat. So this is a great system, and I like how they did this. You know, these difficulties are fairly broad when you think about it, and the line between, you know, an easy and a medium encounter, for instance, is rather blurred. You know, you can have encounters that it's kind of hard to decide, is this easy or medium or hard, right? So I like that. And I think it's a useful tool because as a GM, you can probably pick where you want to be in this spectrum, right? I have this encounter I'm planning. Do I want it to be easy? Do I want it to be just kind of a speed bump in the road? There's no real risk. There's not even any real challenge. And the player characters might get through it without using any resources other than their time. Or do I want a medium encounter where it's a little more difficult? Some resources will probably be spent, but there's not a real risk of someone dying or anything like that. Or do I want a hard encounter where it's going to be more difficult? It's going to be more challenging. A weaker character may go down or may even die, but chances are still pretty good that the player characters are going to prevail. Or do I want a deadly encounter where there's a lot of risk? There's a very real chance that one or more characters could die and success is not guaranteed. And a lot will depend on the tactics the player characters use. The other thing to remember is, you know, once you get into deadly, like there's nothing else, right? So you can have an encounter that's just quote, barely deadly, right? It's just barely in that deadly range where, you know, it's like, well, one or two characters might die, right? Or you can have an encounter that's also deadly that's way further into that range where it's like almost guaranteed all the characters are going to die unless they find some way to really swing things into their favor. So there's a wide spectrum within the deadly encounters to deal with. And it's good to be aware of that and to think about not just is this deadly, but how deadly is it? So I think for most of us, for any encounter we're planning, it's pretty easy to figure out where we want to fall on the spectrum of difficulty. All right, so next we have XP thresholds by character level chart. And so I don't want to go into super deep detail on on how this encounter system works because, you know, that's not going to be at all interesting to someone listening who doesn't play 5th edition D&D. And also, I don't know, it's just, I think it would be a long, boring discussion, honestly. But I do want to hit the highlights so that hopefully if you're confused by this, I can help you out and help you figure this out. So we've got a table here that we're going to be referring to XP thresholds by character level. And we have a short discussion here in a text box about challenge rating. So when putting together an encounter or adventure, especially at lower levels, exercise caution when using monsters whose challenge rating is higher than the party's average level. Such a creature might deal enough damage with a single action to take out adventurers of a lower level. For example, an ogre has a challenge rating of 2, but it can kill a first level wizard with a single blow. Now, I think there's actually a mistake here. If you're worried about challenge rating and you're worried about the potential of a monster one-shotting one of your player characters, you need to compare it to the level of your lowest level PC, not the average party level. Because if your average party level is 4, but you have in the party a third level wizard, then that CR4 monster can totally one-shot your third level wizard, right? So if the whole point of this is to avoid that, then you want to look at the lowest level PC in your party, not the average. So I really don't know why they did that. It seems like a glaring mistake. In addition, some monsters have features that might be difficult or impossible for lower level characters to overcome. For example, a Rakshasa has a challenge rating of 13 and is immune to spells of 6th level and lower. Spellcasters of 12th level or lower have no spells higher than 6th level, meaning that they won't be able to affect the Rakshasa. Oh my god, I can't say that. Rakshasa with their magic, putting the adventurers at a serious disadvantage. Such an encounter would be significantly tougher for the party than the monster's challenge rating might suggest. And again, they kind of mentioned this, but this is much more of an issue at lower levels, and the higher level the player characters get, the less and less this is an issue. But especially at lower levels like tier 1 and even tier 2 of play, this is something that you want to think about. All right, so let's talk about how we evaluate an encounter difficulty that we're creating. And I'll walk you through this as quickly as possible while still hopefully clearing up any confusion people might have. So first, we determine XP thresholds. So you're going to look at this table, XP thresholds by character level, to do that. The table has 4 XP thresholds for each character level, 1 for each category of encounter difficulty. So when you look at the table, on our y-axis up and down, we have character level 1st through 20th. And then on our x-axis, our 4 other columns, we have one for easy, medium, hard, and deadly encounter. So you very simply look at the level of the player character. So let's say we're talking about a first level character. And we see for a first level character, for an easy encounter, it's 25 XP. For a medium, it's 50 XP. For hard, it's 75 XP. And for deadly, it's 100 XP. And that's the, like they said, the threshold. So So easy is 25 XP. As soon as you get to 50 XP, you're now in a medium encounter. As soon as you get to 75 XP, you're in a hard encounter. As soon as you get to 100 XP, you're in a deadly encounter. So hard encounter is 75 XP, deadly is 100. So if you're talking 80 XP, that's still a hard encounter, right? So you basically do this for each character in the party to figure out what's your XP threshold for the entire party. So let's say, we'll keep it simple. Let's say you have a party of four first level characters. Then you'd say, okay, first level easy is 25 XP. So I have four characters, so that's 100 XP, 25 XP for each of them. So for an easy encounter, my threshold for my party of four first level characters is 100 XP, four times 25. And you do the same for medium, hard, and deadly. So medium would be 200 XP, four times 50. Now, the cool thing about this is it allows you to deal with groups where not everybody's the same level. Like, that was the easiest possible example, right? Everybody's the same level. But let's say you have a party where you've got two first level characters and two second level characters. Well, for the two first level characters, easy is 25 XP each. So that's 50. 25 XP for two characters. So that's 50. And then for your second level characters, the easy threshold is 50. So two times 50 is 100. So your total would be 150, right? Two times 25 for your two first level characters, which is 50, plus two times 50 for your second level characters, which is 100, which is 150. So it's actually pretty easy. And I recommend, if math is not your forte, just use a calculator. It makes it stupid easy when you use a calculator. I mean, you could probably do it in your head, but if you can't or you don't want to, use a calculator. It's super easy. All right, so you've determined this threshold, and this is something you only need to do every time the player character is level. So, you know, you start out, let's say you have your party of four first level characters. You can just write down somewhere in your GM notes, easy encounter is 100 XP, four times 25. Medium encounter is 200 XP, four times 50. Hard encounter is, oh my God, I have to think. What would it be? 300 XP, I think, four times 75. And then deadly encounter is 400 XP, four times 100. And you just write that down that one time, and then you use those numbers until someone levels, and then it'll change. The other nice thing about this is you can compensate if a player isn't there. So let's say on a given game session, only three of my player characters are there. Well, then I know that an easy encounter is now 75 XP instead of 100, because it's three times 25 instead of four, because I only have three characters there that night. So it's kind of nice for that. So yeah, and this says record those totals that you come up with for your party, because you're going to use those for every encounter until they level up. All right, so you now have figured out your XP thresholds for your specific party of characters for an easy, medium, hard, and deadly encounter. So next, we're going to total the monster's XP for the encounter. So you just add up the XP for all the monsters you're using in that encounter. And you can find that in the monster stat block, where it gives their challenge rating. So now the next step is we're going to modify that total XP for the monsters based on how many monsters there are in the group or in the encounter. And the reason for this is what we call action economy. And it's very simply, how many actions do the player characters have versus as a total, as a group, versus how many actions do the monsters have as a group? And an encounter where the monsters or the adversaries have more actions than the player characters do, that's going to tend to be more challenging than an encounter where the monsters have the same number of actions or less actions than what the player characters do. So we need a way to account for this in our design. And this is the major way that there's a discrepancy between this method and the method in the Unearthed Arcana or Xanathar's Guide. When you use those methods for generating multiple monster encounters, it does not factor in the increased difficulty of having more monsters. And to me, that's a glaring mistake. It was in the Inert Arcana, and it's in Xanathar's Guide. They didn't fix it. So that's why I use both methods. I find Xanathar's Guide's method, or the Unearthed Arcana method, they're the exact same. I find that method quicker and easier when I'm first coming up with the encounter to get a feel for how challenging is this going to be, how many goblins do I want, how many ogres do I want, things like that. But once I've come up with my encounter with Xanathar's Guide, I always cross-check it with the DMG, because again, if I'm using more than one monster, Xanathar's Guide does not factor in the increased difficulty of having more actions on the side of the monsters. And you will often, if you're creating encounters using a large number of creatures, using Xanathar's Guide, you will often create deadly encounters. Almost always, if you use as many as that says you can use, you will almost always be creating deadly encounters, which if that's what you want, awesome. But a lot of times it's not what we want. So I really recommend cross-indexing with the Dungeon Master's Guide and see what the actual difficulty of your encounter would be and adjust from there. All right, so how do we do this? How do we factor in the fact that if there's more monsters, more actions, it's going to be more difficult? Well, it's really simple. So we have a chart here called Encounter Multipliers. And you just look on this chart for how many monsters you have, just the number of monsters total. So we added up the XP for all the monsters. Let's say we're going to use, I don't know, 6 goblins, okay? So goblins are worth 50 XP apiece. They're CR 1/4. So 6 goblins would be 300 XP is what they're worth in XP, right? So we're going to look on this encounter multipliers table and see how many monsters we have. So we have 6, right? So I look on this table and I see that for 3 to 6 monsters, my multiplier is x2. So what that means is I take that XP total for the goblin, 600 XP, and I times that by 2, which makes it 1200 XP. And this is just to figure out how challenging this encounter is. This does not mean that I'm going to double the XP that I give the PCs. It doesn't mean that those goblins are going to be worth 1200 XP instead of 600 as far as what the PCs earn. This is just for determining how challenging this encounter is going to be. And again, this is just factoring the fact that the more monsters there are, the harder it's going to be. So real quickly, those multipliers, if there's only one monster, then it's x1, which means it doesn't change, right? So one goblin is worth 50 XP. And as far as the difficulty of that encounter, it's just 50 XP because there's only one goblin. 2 monsters is x1.5. 3 to 6 monsters is x2. 7 to 10 monsters is x2.5. 11 to 14 monsters is x3. And 15 or more monsters is x4. So you can see as you increase the number of monsters, the difficulty ramps up dramatically. All right, so now that we've modified the total XP for the monsters based on how many there are, we then compare that with the XP thresholds for the player characters that we came up with to see what difficulty is this. If there is no match, use the closest threshold that is lower than the adjusted XP value. So for instance, for my party of 4 players, I said that a deadly encounter is 400 XP, right? And for my encounter of 6 goblins, we figured out that that's equivalent to 1200 XP. So that's way beyond the 400 of a deadly. So it's still a deadly encounter, but you can see how deadly just goes forever. So there's a big difference between a 500 XP deadly encounter and a 1200 XP deadly encounter, right? Huge difference. All right, now that's pretty much it. There are a couple other factors that you want to consider, though. One of those is the size of your party. So these guidelines that we have here are assuming that there are 3 to 5 adventurers in the party. And this includes player characters and non-player characters. Any combat capable character in the encounter on the side of the PCs counts as part of the party as far as how many are in the party. So if you have 3 to 5 characters in the party, then you just use this and you're good to go. However, if you have fewer than 3 characters, then you apply the next highest multiplier on the encounter multipliers table. So we said that 6 goblins is a multiplier of times two. 3 to 6 monsters is times two. But if I only had two player characters, then I would go one step higher on that table, which would make it times 2.5, times 2.5, which is the 7 to 10 monsters. Again, I'm going one step higher on the table in difficulty because I have less than three players. Now, you can probably guess how it works if you have more than five players. So if you have six or more characters in the party, then you use the next lowest multiplier on the table. And if you only have a single monster, you use a multiplier of 0.5. So for instance, if I have six or more characters in the party, and again, this includes NPCs, if I have six or more characters in the party, then that single goblin who's worth 50 XP is only considered to be worth 25 XP for the sake of figuring out how challenging this is, because it's a multiplier of 0.5. Now let's say I have my encounter of six goblins, which six goblins are worth 300 XP, just as far as what they're worth. But I have six PCs in my party now, or maybe my four PCs hire a couple of NPCs to help them. So there are six characters in the party. So normally having six monsters would be a multiplier of times two, but because I have six or more characters in the party, I'm going to go one step down in difficulty to a multiplier of times 1.5. So that encounter, if I have six or more characters, instead of being double XP for difficulty, which would be 1200 XP, it's only 1.5 times the XP, so it'd be 900 XP. I hope that makes sense. And if not, just go through this in the DMG. You know, it'll make more sense as you read it and look at the tables. So that's it in a nutshell. If you have 3 to 5 characters in the party, then you just use these tables as is. If you have less than three characters, then you're going to go one step harder in difficulty on the encounter multipliers table. And if you have six or more characters in the party, you're going to go one step easier on the encounter multipliers table. Now, another thing to consider is multi-part encounters. So sometimes an encounter features multiple enemies that the party doesn't face all at once. For example, monsters might come at the party in waves. And this is a great way to do encounters and to also kind of dial in the difficulty you want on the fly during play, is if it's too easy, you can have another wave of monsters come in. Or if it's too hard, you cannot bring in the second wave of monsters that you were planning to bring in. For such encounters, treat each discrete part or wave as a separate encounter for the purpose of determining its difficulty. Now, a party can't benefit from a short rest between parts of a multi-part encounter, so they won't be able to spend hit dice to regain hit points or recover any abilities that require a short rest to regain. As a rule, if the adjusted XP value for the monsters in a multi-part encounter is higher than 1/3 the party's expected XP total for the adventuring day, then the encounter is going to be harder than the sum of its parts. All right, so what they're referring to is on the next page, we have a table called Adventuring Day XP. And just to explain this, we're going to jump ahead to that section and then we'll come back. So assuming a typical adventuring conditions and average luck, most adventuring parties can handle about 6 to 8 medium or hard encounters in a day. So this is, if you're wondering how much can I throw at my player characters before I let them rest, how much can they handle? This is what that's talking about. So 6 to 8 medium or hard encounters in a day. If the adventurer has more easy encounters, the adventurers can get through more, obviously, right? If it has more deadly encounters, then they can handle fewer, right? Just makes sense. In the same way you figure out the difficulty of an encounter, you can use the XP values of monsters and other opponents in an adventure as a guideline for how far the party is likely to progress. For each character in the party, use the Adventuring Day XP table to estimate how much XP that character is expected to earn in a day. Add together the values of all party members to get a total for the party's adventuring day. This provides a rough estimate of the adjusted XP value for encounters the party can handle before the characters will need to take a long rest. So again, this is long rest, not short rest. So for example, for first level characters, we see adjusted XP per day per character of 300. So if I have four characters, that means four times 300, 1200 XP in a day worth of encounters they can handle. And again, this is the XP after you've adjusted it for the number of monsters. It's not the actual XP the encounter is worth. And short rests in general, over the course of a full adventuring day, the party will likely need to take two short rests about one third and two thirds of the way through the day. So this is assuming that you're going to give them two short rests during that adventuring day. And so this gives you an idea of how much they can handle in a day. And I have more to say about that in a minute, but let's go back to where we were on the previous page, multi-part encounters. So what this is saying is, you know, let's say you create a multi-part encounter with goblins. Let's say, okay, first the player characters are going to fight six goblins. And then after, I don't know, two rounds of combat, four more goblins are going to show up or something like that. Or after they defeat the first six goblins, four more goblins immediately show up or something like that. So in that case, you would consider each of those waves as a separate encounter. You would balance them each individually and figure their difficulty individually. But then you would also think about what's the total adjusted XP for those encounters, and where does, how does that compare with how much this table says they can handle in a day, to make sure you're not maybe throwing too much at them. And also remembering, if you're doing it in such a way where these waves are one after another and they can't take a short rest between them, just keep in mind that the each successive wave after the first is going to be more challenging than what this is telling you, because they haven't been able to take that short rest and kind of recover from the previous wave. All right, so now we have a section called Building Encounters on a Budget. And this is important to have, I think. You want to know how to do this, but I think in a way it's unfortunate, because at least for me, this section is what got me going down the wrong path, which is thinking about, okay, I want a difficult encounter. I have this much XP. What monsters can I use? And it's kind of a backwards way to design an encounter compared to how I usually do it, and I think how most of us do it, which is what they suggested at the beginning of this section, which is first think about what you want the encounter to be. Once you've got that down, then worry about what difficulty it's going to be. But this building an encounter on a budget is just basically, if you're like, I want a medium encounter for my player characters, how you would go about that. But again, you know, keep in mind that most of the time, this is probably not the way you want to do it. So the party's XP thresholds give you basically a budget of XP that you can spend on monsters to build your encounter. And yeah, you basically just add up the XP of the monsters, and you use the multipliers for having multiple monsters. And again, factoring in if your party is bigger or smaller than 3 to 5 characters, and you just try to stay within that maximum of the difficulty that you want. So if I've got four first level characters and I want a medium encounter, then I have up to 200 XP, four times 50, that I can spend for that encounter. And again, that you got to factor in the multiple monsters. So, you know, if I say, four goblins are 50 XP. So four goblins is 200 XP. I'm good to go. Well, no, because I have four goblins, and the multiplier for four goblins is times two. So as far as difficulty, it's as if those goblins are 800 XP. So that's quite a bit over my budget, and that would indeed be well into deadly territory. So I think if there's one mistake newer GMs make with the system, it's forgetting those multipliers for having more than one monster, because they can make a huge difference, especially with larger groups. All right. Let me talk about one more thing, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about the whole adventuring day thing. So we go down to modifying encounter difficulty. An encounter can be made easier or harder based on the choice of location and the situation, and other things as well. Increase the difficulty of the encounter by one step from easy to medium, for example, if the characters have a drawback that their enemies don't. Reduce the difficulty by one step if the characters have a benefit that their enemies don't. Any additional benefit or drawback pushes the encounter one step in the appropriate direction. If the characters have both a benefit and a drawback, the two cancel each other out. So here are some examples of drawbacks that they might have. The whole party is surprised and the enemy isn't. The enemy has cover and the party doesn't. The characters are unable to see the enemy. The characters are taking damage every round from some environmental effect or magical source, and the enemy isn't. The characters are hanging from a rope in the midst of scaling a sheer wall or cliff, stuck to the floor, or otherwise in a situation that greatly hinders their mobility or makes them sitting ducks. Situational benefits are similar to drawbacks, except that they benefit the characters instead of the enemy. So basically, you know, this encounter difficulty that we've come up with is an encounter in a vacuum, right? It's an encounter where all that's coming into play is the abilities of the characters and the abilities of the adversaries, and that's it. But few encounters occur in a vacuum, and really good encounters don't, right? Like, we want to have other things going on. So really what this is saying is, you think about what's every advantage that one side has that the other side doesn't. So if there's something that gives the player characters an advantage over the adversary, then that reduces the difficulty by a step. If there's something that gives the adversary an advantage over the player characters, then that increases the difficulty by a step. And you can have multiple of these factoring in. And again, they gave a list here of some example things that could be difficulties. Now, I'll point out that the system as written, this has nothing to do with the XP payout that you give the characters, but the system is written, you just total up the XP that the monsters are worth, and that's what the player characters get, and they get that amount. It doesn't matter, right? So if the player characters face one goblin, and this is a ridiculously easy encounter, that one goblin is worth 50 XP. If the player characters face 20 goblins, which is a ridiculously deadly encounter, each of those goblins is still worth 50 XP. So you see here the a problem with this is it's not factoring in how challenging this encounter actually was. It's just like, well, a goblin's worth 50 XP, whether you kill him in his sleep or whether you fight him and he has a vorpal sword and enchanted plate armor. He's still worth 50 XP, right? Okay, that might not be the best example, because those things would actually increase his CR, giving him a vorpal sword and enchanted armor. But it's like, if I fight one goblin, he's worth 50 XP. If I fight 20 goblins, they're still each only worth 50 XP, even though that's a far more challenging encounter. In the same way, these things that adjust the difficulty of the encounter also don't affect the XP payout. Because if I'm fighting on a slippery bridge, I get the same XP for that encounter as I do if I'm fighting in a grassy meadow, even though one encounter is far more challenging than the other. Now, this is a whole can of worms that I've talked about on the show. I'd love to talk about again on the show if people want to hear about it. I don't want to get too mired in it right now, but just to kind of put it quickly, there's kind of a problem with the XP system in D&D compared with the advancement, or specifically the rate of advancement. And I think that... I mean, I don't know. I can only guess what was going on at Wizards that led to these discrepancies. But I can only think that there are so many variations of this game presented in the DMG. And, you know, we have regular XP. We've got milestone XP. We've got just level the player characters when you want. That I think maybe there is some kind of communication breakdown. And we've got some elements of the game that are kind of more assuming one type of leveling, and some they're assuming another. I don't know. But the discrepancy that I'm talking about is simply this. Elsewhere in the books, I believe it's in the DMG, it talks about leveling pace. And Wizards says or suggests the following leveling pace, assuming that you play 4-hour sessions. It should take one session for the player characters to get from level 1 to level 2. It should take one session, 4 hours of play, for the player characters to get from level 2 to level 3. It should then take 2 sessions, 8 hours of play, for the player characters to get from level 3 to level 4. It should then take 2 to 3 sessions, or 8 to 12 hours of play, for each level thereafter. Now, that sounds great to me. As far as leveling pace, that sounds fine. Now, personally, I would slow things down a bit at tier four, you know, one, and actually probably even tier three. So once, what I tend to do is I use that exactly as I stated. And I tend to, for tier two, which is level 5 to 10, I tend to veer on the side of it taking 2 sessions per level, occasionally 3, but usually 2. And then for tier 3, from level 11 to 17, I veer more on it taking 3 sessions. And then I haven't gotten to level 17 yet in a campaign, but if I got to level 17, I'd probably make it 4 or 5 sessions per level, just because I think as you get higher and higher level, you should slow down the progression, because A, you're getting towards near the end of the game. Like, there's nowhere else to go. So if you want to keep playing these characters, you need to slow it down for that reason. And B, the higher level you get, especially spellcasters, characters get a lot of abilities. And if you're leveling them too quickly, they never really get a chance to get to know the abilities they just got, or get to use all the new spells they got before they're another level. And now they've got new stuff to do. So, but anyway, that's a topic for another day. So we have this suggested leveling speed, right? Sounds great to me. The problem is, the discrepancy is how it actually plays out. If you use XP as instructed in the DMG and you're giving XP for encounters, even if you give some extra XP for role playing or clever strategies or things like that, you will not realize that leveling pace. It will be much slower. It's incredibly difficult to design an adventure that you can play in 4 hours that will lead to each player character earning 300 XP, which is the amount of XP they need to get from level 1 to 2. And it gets more difficult every level after that. And the bottom line is, if you use the system as written, your leveling pace will be way, way slower than what I just suggested. Much, much slower. So one suggestion I have to consider is award XP based on the actual difficulty of the encounter, not just the monster's XP. So give them the XP value of the encounter difficulty. See what I'm saying? So, and then that will factor in the fact that fighting more monsters at once is harder, and they should probably get more XP for that. It will factor in an encounter where they have a lot of things stacked against them, like their surprise, they're fighting on an icy bridge, there's ambient damage going on all the time. Those encounters will be worth more XP because they're harder, as I think they should be. So my suggestion is simply, instead of just totaling the XP for the monsters and giving them that for the encounter, give them the total that you come up with as far as the difficulty of the encounter. So let's take our 6 goblins, or let's say 4 goblins, okay? So we've got a party of 4 players, 4 characters. They fight 4 goblins. 4 goblins are worth 200 XP. Just, if I was just awarding XP based on what goblins are worth, 200 XP to divide among 4 players, they'd each get 50 XP, which to get to level 300, it would take 6 of those encounters to get to level 300. And you're not going to be able to do 6 combat encounters in one game session of 4 hours. There's no way. So 4 goblins worth 200 XP, 50 per player. However, 4 goblins with a group of 4 players has a multiplier of x2 for encounter difficulty. So as far as encounter difficulty, instead of being worth 200 XP, they're worth 400 XP. So at this point, if I award them 400 XP, each player character gets 100 XP, which means they each need 3 encounters like this in that session to get to second level, which is doable. You could do 3 combat encounters in 1 4-hour session. It'd be close if there's a lot of role playing and other things going on, but you could do it, especially in like a dungeon setting. And I could also, if there are other circumstances that increase the difficulty, like say the player characters are surprised, would increase it 1 step, which would be a multiplier of 2.5, which would be, what do we say? The
Goblins are worth 200, so that would be 400, 500 XP that encounter would be worth. So that's something to consider. And that, you know, I wouldn't just blindly do that. You know, don't just take my word for it. I'd think about, you know, plan your encounters and think about, okay, how much XP would they get if I just did it based on what the monsters are worth? How much XP would they get if I base it on the actual difficulty? And which of those do I like better? And that's assuming you're not using milestones or something like that. Oh, and as far as milestones, I should have mentioned this earlier. But if you are using milestones, then what a milestone is worth is really simple. A minor milestone is worth the same as an easy encounter. So for a first level party of first level characters, if they hit an easy milestone, it's 25 XP per character. So each character gets 25 XP. A major milestone is the same as a hard encounter. So first level character hits a major milestone, that would be 75 XP per character. So that's how the milestones work if you're using milestones. Really simple. So another way that you could address the discrepancy between the pace of the leveling and the actual XP rewards and how much it takes to get from level to level is you could do something like milestone XP, and then you could make those milestones worth more or less, or make them worth whatever they need to be worth to get the leveling speed that you want. Probably the easiest way to get the leveling speed that you want is just decide when the player characters level and just level them. That's definitely the easiest. Downside with that, though, is there's no reward system there. It's very arbitrary. Even if it's not, it seems very arbitrary to the players. It's like, oh, well, Lex is just going to level us when he feels like it. It doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter how smart we are. It doesn't matter how good the role playing is. It doesn't matter how in character we are. It doesn't matter how good our tactics are. We're going to level when he levels us. And that's just the way it is. Now, that may not be the case, but that's the way it's often perceived by the players. So I prefer to have more of a reward system. I prefer there to be a relationship between how well the player characters do and how quickly they level, what kind of rewards they get. So the way you can do that is, like I suggested, give them XP based on the difficulty of the encounter instead of just what the monsters are worth. Give them that extra XP. I think that's probably one of the easier ways to do it. Or you could use a combination of using like milestones and then giving set rewards for different things. Like, and this is kind of what I've been doing in my campaign right now, although I'm thinking of shifting to the other method. But well, actually in my campaign right now, the leveling pace, if you use the XP system, is so much slower than the suggested leveling pace that I have actually been giving them the XP for the monsters, like whatever the monsters are worth. And I've been giving them XP for minor and major milestones. And I've been giving them XP for other things like good role playing or good tactics or things like that. And I'm still sometimes just giving out chunks of XP just so that they can level at the speed I want them to, which is actually a little slower than the speed suggested in the DMG. So, you know, that gives you an idea of how huge this discrepancy really is. So what I do, or what I've been doing right now, is, you know, a minor milestone is just achieving some kind of goal in the campaign. So I have a lot of NPCs that give like side quests and stuff like that. So completing one of those quests is worth a minor milestone. So let's say the quest is to go deal with a band of goblins. The player characters do that. Well, not only do they earn the XP for the goblins, but they also then, when they complete the quest, they earn a minor milestone worth of XP for completing that quest. So basically, they earn more XP if they kill goblins as part of a quest than they do if they just go kill some goblins. And that's by design. And I did that on purpose to encourage them to actually pursue quests and storylines as opposed to just going and killing random things. For me, a major milestone is a major goal. So in the campaign that I'm running right now, their first major goal was to find this village. So once they find the village, that's a major milestone. They get that XP above and beyond all the other XP they've earned. And then any other kind of thing I want to give an award for, it's equivalent to a minor milestone of XP, which again is an easy, the easy amount for each player character. So at first level, a minor milestone is 25 XP per player character, because that's what they'd get for an easy encounter. So that could be something like good role playing, really getting in the character, coming up with a cool idea, making everybody laugh, whatever. So I'll throw out all kinds of awards for things like those. Each of those are worth a minor milestone. So I'm doing all that in addition to the XP they get from the monsters, and it's still not enough to realize that leveling pace that's suggested in the DMG. So pretty huge discrepancy there that you'll want to think about and decide how you're going to handle that. All right, finally, we have a thing here, fun combat encounters. So these are some suggestions of ways you can make encounters more fun and interesting. You can use terrain features that pose inherent risks to both the characters and their enemies, such as a frayed rope, bridge, and pools of green slime. You can use terrain features that provide a change of elevation, such as pits, stacks of empty crates, ledges, and balconies. Now, I'll point out here, if you're using a grid of miniatures, this can be a pain in your ass. So this is a much better thing to use, I think, in Theater of the Mind, where you don't have to figure out how you're going to represent all these different elevations on a grid. You can use features that either inspire or force characters and their enemies to move around, such as chandeliers, kegs of gunpowder or oil, and whirling blade traps. You can use enemies in hard-to-reach locations or defensive positions so that characters who normally attack at range are forced to move around the battlefield. And you can use different types of monsters working together. All right, so I said I wanted to go back and talk a little bit more about the Adventuring Day XP. So anything out there that humans do carries with it assumptions, right? Everything in this Dungeon Master's Guide carries with it inherent assumptions that Wizards is making about how you play D&D. So this whole Adventuring Day thing of figuring out how much adjusted XP of encounter should I give a player characters in a day, and this idea of not only is that a maximum that we want to try not to go over, but it's also a lot of people think a target, right? Like they say, what did they say? 6 to 8 encounters in a day. Yeah, 6 to 8 medium or hard encounters in a day. So there are GMs out there who think that they need to do that, that I need to figure out a way to throw 6 to 8 encounters at my player characters every day before they rest, or the game won't be challenging. And I'd say if you're running the game as written and you're sharing all the same assumptions that the writers of the Dungeon Master's Guide are, then yeah, that may be true. And I think that this is assuming a dungeon crawl. That's the only way I could imagine ever possibly being able to do 6 to 8 encounters in a day. And I'm not even talking about doing 6 to 8 encounters in an adventure session, which with a 4-hour session is never going to happen. But just 6 to 8 encounters within 24 hours of in-game time. Like the only way I can really see that happening is if they're fighting in a war or they're in a dungeon, right? In almost any other kind of scenario I can think of, they're not going to have 6 to 8 combat encounters in a single day. It's just not going to happen. So the GM is left wondering, well, what do I do? Am I just forced to constantly run dungeons? Because that's the only way I can challenge my player characters, because that's the only way that I can get that number of encounters in a day. Or are my adventures just going to be pushovers because I'm not doing dungeons, and so there'll never be enough encounters in a day and they'll never be challenging? And the answer to both those questions is of course, no. You do not have to run the game that way. This could probably be a topic for a whole episode. I'll just put forward a few thoughts for now, and you can get a hold of me and let me know what you think. And depending on feedback, maybe I'll do an episode about this in the future. First of all, first thought, There are numerous ways to challenge your players. There are numerous ways to challenge player characters. Combat encounters and threatening their characters with death is just one way. There are other ways to challenge them. You can have very challenging social encounters that have meaningful consequences that could be as bad or worse than losing a combat encounter. Watch Game of Thrones for some great ideas of how a social encounter could wreck your character's life just as bad or worse than any combat encounter you could imagine. There are also, you know, things you can do with exploration, like traps and puzzles and things like that, that can challenge the players and their characters. You can give your player characters mysteries to solve. So in episode 200, when we were talking about creating adventures, we talked about some different types of adventures you can create. And one of those is a mystery. And, you know, solving a mystery is usually not about beating up a whole bunch of goblins or bad guys, right? It's about using your wits and investigating and putting together clues and figuring things out. And it's a lot of social interaction. It can be a lot of intrigue, depending what you're doing with it. And it can be very challenging, and no one ever takes any damage. So that's my first thought. There are other ways you can challenge your player characters other than combat encounters. My second thought is, remember that the 6 to 8 encounters per day is, what is it, medium and hard encounters? Right. So, you know, keep in mind that if you're using easy encounters, well, it's going to take even more than 6 to 8 encounters per day. And if you're using deadly encounters, it's going to take less than 6 to 8 encounters per day. I have noticed something with 5th edition, and this is probably true with a lot of games, but it's especially true with 5th edition compared to previous editions of D&D I played. There is a huge, huge difference between your party of player characters when they've just finished a long rest, all their magic items have recharged, they have full capabilities. There's a huge difference between that group of player characters and what they can handle, and a group of player characters who've used most of their spells, who've used most of the charges of their magic items, who've, you know, taken damage, they're not at full hit points, they've used a lot of their class abilities that they need to rest again before they can use again, right? There's a huge difference. So I have found that if I'm dealing with a group of player characters who are fresh, who've just rested, they've got all their resources, I can often throw what this system would call deadly encounters at them, and they will have no problem. If, on the other hand, we're talking about player characters that are very depleted in resources, then, you know, a deadly encounter could easily wipe them out. So something that I've kind of learned just almost by accident, just running this game, is that a great way to get around this, oh, you know, how am I going to do this many encounters in a day, is just don't do it. Do fewer encounters, but make those encounters more challenging. So if you could just do one encounter in a day, but make it a deadly encounter, make it really challenging. Use waves of foes, right? So you can keep bringing in more foes to dial in that difficulty exactly where you want it to be. And, you know, you can easily, with one very challenging encounter, get the player characters to deplete and use the same amount of resources that you would do with the 6 to 8 medium or hard encounters. Because the whole point of this is to get the player characters to use their resources so they have fewer and fewer resources, so each encounter is more and more challenging. And again, this is all assuming a dungeon crawl, which personally I find rather unfortunate, because most of the D&D adventures I've run have not been dungeon crawls. And I mean, I know there are groups that just do nothing but dungeon crawls, but most of the groups I know of, you know, they don't always do dungeon crawls. So to design the game assuming that we're all doing dungeon crawls, I think is unfortunate and in my mind, not the greatest decision. So the game is assuming that you're doing dungeon crawls. And in that situation, this depletion of resources is really important. And it comes down to this balancing act that the players have to do, that this decision they have to constantly make of, do we press on and do another encounter, even though we're down on spells, we're down on hit points, we're down on resources, and we're less likely to succeed because of that. Do we do that? Or do we rest and take the risk of there being maybe some kind of random encounter we have while we rest, or while we're resting, the word spreads through the dungeon that we're here and future encounters will now be harder because they know that we're here and they're prepared for us, or they have time to fortify their defenses, right? So that's usually what's going on in a dungeon crawl, is there's this balance of, well, if you don't rest enough, encounters get progressively more and more difficult, and you're going to get to the point where you can't cope with an encounter and you could have a complete wipe of the party. Balance with, well, on the other hand, every time you rest, you're staying in one place for 8 hours or more. There's a good chance that something's going to stumble upon you. You're going to have some kind of combat encounter during that rest that you wouldn't have had otherwise. There's also time for word to spread through the complex that you're there, for people to prepare defenses, for bad guys to run away, for the enemies that you fought and didn't defeat to heal up themselves, et cetera, et cetera. So there's like this balancing act in a lot of dungeon crawls that the players have to deal with. And that's part of the strategy of the game. That's part of the gameplay, part of the challenge. But if you're not in a dungeon crawl, if you're not in a situation where you're just going to be able to throw, you know, oodles of combat encounters at the player characters one after another, then it's very different. They don't necessarily have that time pressure against taking a rest, or if they do, it's a different kind of time pressure because they have some kind of deadline or something. And they don't so much have to worry about their resources, because they don't have to worry about having to fight 8 battles today before they can rest. So it changes the landscape a lot as soon as you move away from that kind of dungeon crawl adventure, which again is a lot of, if not most, of the adventures that most, if not all of us run. So yeah. So this whole adventuring day thing, I mean, it's kind of a good thing to know and understand and keep in mind, but I see a lot of GMs get way too hung up on it, and they're trying to design their adventures around this so that they have all these encounters. And the last thing you want is to have an encounter just to have an encounter that feels forced. It feels like there's really no reason for this encounter to be here other than we needed more XP, or the DM needed us to lose more hit points, right? So my personal advice to you is, unless you're in a dungeon crawl like that, not to worry about the adventuring day. And if you're concerned about challenging your player characters in combat, just remember that the fewer combats are going to have between long rests, the more difficult those combats can be. And you can even go outside of these guidelines if that's the only thing they're going to face that day. Now, you do still want to remember the CR thing that we talked about with lower level characters, and be careful throwing higher CR monsters at them that can one-shot one of your player characters. And I think this is discussed a little bit more in Xanathar's Guide. But what you can do is you can look at the most powerful monster in the encounter, their most powerful attack, what's the maximum damage that attack could do. Also, what's the average damage that attack does, which is going to be the number that's given, is the average damage if you don't want to roll. But you want to think about the maximum too, which would be, what if you rolled the maximum on the roll? Unless you just use average damage in combat, obviously, and compare that to the hit points of your weakest character. And that's a great way to look at it too. But again, you want to think about CR, because like was discussed, as monsters get higher CR, they get things like they need to be hit by magic weapons, or they're immune to different types of damage. So that can factor in quite a bit as well. All right. Well, I think I'm going to wrap up this discussion today. We've been going for quite a while here, but we are not done talking about creating encounters. Still here in the DMG. Next up, we have random encounters, and I have quite a bit to say about random encounters. A lot of it I've said before. I think it was one of the behind the screens. I talk quite a bit about my flexible encounters and kind of how I approach random encounters, which I call flexible encounters. I don't normally use, quote, random encounters. So I'll link that episode in the show notes as well if you want to check that out. And then also, like I said, I want to discuss the alternative encounter system that's given in Xanathar's Guide or the Unearthed Arcana. So we'll have one, maybe two more episodes talking about encounters. So I would love to hear from you. Any feedback you have on this discussion, gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. Shoot me an email. Let me know if there's any questions about any of this you have, anything you're confused about, let me know. And I'd love to hear from you. And hopefully together we can wrap our brains around this. Probably this is the most complicated part of being a DM for D&D is this encounter balancing. And I know some DMs just don't do it. They just use whatever they feel like using, and maybe they adjust on the fly, maybe they don't. But if you're the kind of GM that you like to plan and prepare for things and have some idea of how challenging this encounter you're building is going to be, these guidelines are really helpful. And again, I really recommend using both systems, that in Xanathar's Guide and in the DMG, together. That's the way I do it. I start out with Xanathar's Guide. I use that system, and then I check with the DMG just to make sure it's not more difficult than I want it to be. And again, all of this, you're going to have to adjust for your given party, and that will change over time. You know, one thing really important to understand about how 5th edition is constructed is the system is assuming zero magic items. So these encounter guidelines are assuming that the player characters have zero magic items. So as soon as you hand out a +1 sword, it changes things, right? Right? A +1 to attack and damage is a pretty big deal in this edition. And even more so when you get to more powerful magic items and or greater number of magic items. So if you're handing out magic items at all, it's going to change this. You're going to have to adapt. If you're using a different method to come up with ability scores than the 27-point point buy or the stat array, that's going to change things. If you're letting player characters roll for their ability scores, that's going to change things. You know, I see some GMs, some of the more vocal GMs out there who think this system doesn't work because it doesn't fit their party. But again, this system is for a hypothetical average party that has no magic items. You know, your party may be significantly more powerful or less powerful than that. So you're going to have to adjust. But the point is you have a system, you have a framework, and you can figure it out. The more you do this, the more you deal with a specific group of characters, you can figure out, using this system, my characters can routinely handle the easier of the deadly encounters. And you know, maybe you even come up with your own chart and you're like, well, my encounters actually aren't deadly until this point. Some of the what this would call deadly encounters are actually hard encounters for my group. Or something like that. I mean, you'll figure out, okay, they can actually handle a little bit more than what this is suggesting or not quite as much or whatever. But the thing I like about it is it gives you a really great baseline. It's really easy to use. It's really straightforward. And it allows you to deal with groups who have player characters of different levels, who have NPCs of different levels. Well, NPCs don't have levels. They have CR. And it allows you to deal with groups of different sizes. So maybe one week you've got 6 players, the next week you've got 4 players. You can use this to handle all of that. And as someone who's been running D&D since the second edition days, this is by far the best system like that I've seen in the game as far as giving you a system to work with and giving you a system that's consistent so that you can adjust for your group and dial it in. Pretty much exactly. So it's a pretty good system to use. And again, nothing's ever going to be perfect because there's just too many variables to account for. The best you can do is come up with something that's perfect for your group. But again, as soon as characters level, as soon as you hand out new magic items, it's going to change. So you just got to be fluid and adapt. We'll be right back. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 202 of Game Master's Journey. I want to give a huge thank you to Jesse here for your 5-star review on iTunes. Jesse says, I'm a new GM and I found this podcast while looking for advice on running a game. I don't play D&D, but I found the information provided here was still applicable to other games as well. Thanks for the help. Thank you so much, Jesse. I really, really appreciate your review, and I'm glad that you're enjoying the podcast and it's helpful to you. And I do try to make the topics that we talk about on the show as relevant to other games as I can. But yeah, we have a bit of a D&D 5th edition focus here and have for quite a while, quite a few seasons, just mainly because that's what I'm playing. That's what I'm running right now. But luckily, a lot of what we talk about when it comes to the art and the craft of being a game master is the same no matter what game you run. So I'm glad that you're finding it useful for whatever games you're playing. If you would like to get a hold of me, you can email me at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker, and you can also call the Game Master's Journey voicemail number and leave me a message. If your question or feedback is entertaining or enlightening or both, you might even hear your message on the show. That number is 951-GMJ-LEX-1. That's 951-465-5391, or you can find that number in the show notes. You can find those show notes for this and all the episodes of Game Master's Journey at starwalkerstudios.com/GameMastersJourney, as well as links to connect with the Game Master's Journey community on Google+ and Discord, where you can share ideas, questions, and stories with other listener GMs. If you have comments, questions, or feedback on the show, I would love to hear from you. If you'd like to support the show, the best way you can help me out is by becoming a patron. You can find out all about becoming a patron at patreon.com/starwalkerstudios. Check the bottom of the show notes for all the other ways you can support the show, including purchasing a t-shirt or my D&D adventure, The Trickster's Labyrinth, at starwalkerstudios.com. You can also use my Amazon referral link when you shop on Amazon. You can find all these ways to support the show and more at starwalkerstudios.com/support. I hope that you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I hope you have a chance to run your favorite RPG. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music, courtesy of Cloudwalker, Transboy, Renfield, Stanko, and Ish. See the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/GameMastersJourney.